So somebody asked me to recite the poem again because they did not manage to write it down. So, the way of the Buddha is to know yourself. To know yourself is to forget yourself. And to forget yourself is to be enlightened by all things. So this afternoon, I want to look a little more at the kind of, you could say, the interpersonal aspect of the identity. So, I mean, there are different things to look at. The first thing, which is interesting in terms of looking at this anatta, this not self, is to, if we reflect on how this organism survives, then actually we realize that our survival depends on eating, drinking, breathing, wearing clothes, having shelter, taking medicine when we ill. So if you, and that's when we kind of talk about condition, that's what we're talking about. Kind of like, in a way, our survival depends on lots of conditions outside ourselves. And to me, when we see that, when we realize that, then actually we really feel connected. One interesting practice to do is when you breathe, when you do the mindfulness of the breath, to kind of really focus on asking yourself, what is this air that I breathe? And if you just connect to the air that you breathe with mindfulness, actually you realize that you breathe the same air with everybody, which means your air going to my lung, and my, I mean, the one who goes into my lung goes into yours. So, and then we have this strange feeling of being really isolated. What I mean, through the pore of the body, through the breath. I mean, constantly the world is coming into us and we're going out into the world. And so I find that's what is interesting, to look at the condition that helps us to survive, because we realize that actually, you know, the food we eat, and that's one of the practices Thich Nhat Hanh encourages, is start to realize you eating this tangerine or you're eating this bread, and look at the conditions, all the conditions for this to arrive to you, a piece of paper, whatever it is. And then you realize that this thing, which seems to be fixed and solid, is actually kind of like comes from this whole planting of the tree, planting of the seed, the harvesting, the transportation, the making of it. I mean, this whole chain of condition, energy, resources for you to have your piece of bread and you think toast, you know. But I mean, you know, you can look at it's a toast and it could have been toasted better. Or you think, wow, it's amazing, I have this piece of toast. Yeah. And then you see the whole kind of like all the energy, resources for you to have this thing. So I think this is also why this, to be enlightened by others, to forget the self is to be enlightened by others, by all things. That's what the idea is about. That actually we realize that interconnection, we realize, we experience that interdependence. And so we look at the world, I think, and we feel about the world and ourselves in a little different way. To me, that's kind of a, instead of feeling really self-identified and self kind of isolated, then actually we can feel much more connected to the world. Then there is another facet of our condition, and this is in a way, so we have different elements within ourselves, and of course we can identify with this or that. But then we all have our relationship to the environment, which generally is in some activity or is in some relationship. So you have work, you have relationship, you have material thing, you have success. So in a way, work, I mean, not everybody can. I think we have to make the difference, possibly not, between paid work and unpaid work. And I would like not to make a difference between the two. But you could be still active and not be paid for your activity, because nowadays with the economic condition, it's not always easy to be paid for one's activity. But the thing is that, in a way, we need to work. We need to be active. And possibly we might need to earn money. Again, we might need to survive in some way, so that can get connected. And then it's interesting because, you know, one part of our condition, like work, could be an important part. It could give us some financial basis. It could give us a wonderful activity to do. It could give us a nice community to do it in. So it could give us many different things. And then we could identify with it. You see, when something becomes a little prominent, it's easy to identify with it. And so, in a way, you could identify yourself as a teacher, as a nurse, as a doctor, as a therapist, as a gardener, as a cook, etc. And then it's kind of like there is a difference with creatively engaging with that part of your life, which is important, and so identifying with it, that actually it's like that's where you get what one could say a good feeling of identity. I am working, so I exist. It's not just I think I exist. I am working, I exist. I have my place in the world. I had this strange experience many years ago with a friend who was Dutch from Holland. And she was not working, and she was saying, I feel bad, I'm not working. And I said, oh, why that? She said, oh, because I cannot pay taxes and I cannot be a contributing citizen. And I said, oh, in France they have the opposite problem, you know. You're a good citizen when you avoid to pay taxes. So to me it was fascinating to see that there was a certain level of identity with a certain kind of, that's what also societal, I mean, that's a thing, there is cultural thing that we can identify with. If I am part of that society, I must do this at all time in all ways. Or it could be, I mean, to be a responsible citizen, I think is a good idea. I pay my taxes. I want to pay my taxes so it can help other people too. And so, but the thing is, in a way, the thing with a question of identity is not so much that we have an identity or not, but do we creatively engage? Who do we grasp? Because as soon as we grasp, we're going to limit ourselves. So if all our identity go into our work, then what happens if something goes wrong at work? Then is there something wrong with my identity then? I think that's when we put too much in one place, then it becomes problematic. As long as it's good, then your identity feels good. But once it goes, it's like, what happened? And I think that's often what happens when either people change job or lose their job or retire. And it's kind of like, I am not working anymore. And then you can see some people, like my sister, she retired and it was like, this is great, I love it, I can do what I want when I want. And she really is enjoying her retirement. And so her identity has not been diminished by not working in a terrible office and doing all of the work of everybody without being retributed. When other people, it's kind of like a part of themselves is gone. And then you have to make another part of yourself. Or if you have an illness, if you have a kind of serious illness, and you cannot continue to work in the same way, does it mean you are not yourself because you are ill and you cannot do that? Or does it mean that your identity can be established in a different way? So that's the thing, really, I think, to look at in terms of that, or in terms of relationship. Often, I mean, there is a lot of, in terms of identity, there is our ideas, our feeling about it, but also there is a lot of how we fit within the society. What are, in a way, kind of what is the identity which is expected from the society? And I know this might surprise you, but I love to read kind of magazines. Like, not all of them, but some, like Grazia, Look, and even Now. I read Now because it's fascinating sociologically. I learn a lot of things from reading Now about Englishness and TV program. And so what I find interesting is often I love to read the letter section. And they have some kind of good articles sometimes. And it's very interesting because sometimes you see, like a certain age, like they do an article on the people who are 30, especially the ladies who are 30. And immediately they say, you know, if I am single, if I don't have a child, I'm always asked, you know, when are you going to get somebody and when are you going to get a child? You get somebody now, when are you going to get a child? And they say, well, I mean, I don't necessarily want to get a child. I don't necessarily want to be with somebody. But it's kind of like there is this kind of society assumption or group assumption of, you know, about all kind of things, about work, about relationship, about having children or not, also about what type of work. That one I think is very interesting. If you are a CEO of a big company, or if you kind of, you know, do financial things, or if you're a big computer expert, I mean, generally your identity is better, and everybody else thinks, woo! And if you are a house cleaner, it's like, I know how to do this. But I was a house cleaner for 10 years, and that's why I think they should have bigger identity, and they should be better paid. Because that's what I realized when I did my... When I was a house cleaner for 10 years, it was fascinating, you know, because house cleaning is not viewed like kind of, you know, this great thing, but I think it's a great task to do. And you do it as everybody else would do their task. And then I'm kind of reflecting on how your identity go up and down according to how the society value your work and, of course, how much you earn. Mm-hmm. And what I found amazing, I mean, recently, that's why I read things too, because I think they're funny. But recently, a French footballer from the Paris Saint-Germain who beat Chelsea. And one guy from there did something, but I don't know, stupid of stupid, really stupid. And he did not think. He did not. He kind of went into this other identity, which was not his footballer doesn't make a mistake identity. And if somebody who is earning a lot of money and making that mistake could make him lose a lot of money. It's very interesting how, you know, just because he's this footballer and he's from there and he gets lots of money and then everybody thinks he's amazing and he's an incredible identity. And then he just makes that one mistake. And poof, it's like the identity was up here, now it's down there. In one night, overnight. I mean, very likely he's the same fellow. And I presume he can run after the football as good. So it's kind of looking, you know, in terms of identity. Where does it rest? Where does our identity rest? Does it rest into our work, our relationship, things? That's interesting, things. I mean, that's one thing in which really I'm always confused by when there is a latest iPhone and people queue all night to get the latest iPhone. I mean, you might do this, I don't know. But I find this, you know, you might not need it and you could get it in 2 days. But it seems to have the latest iPhone. I don't have an iPhone myself. I mean, prehistory there. And seems to do something to your identity. or having certain cars seems to do something to your identity. And it's kind of interesting things. I mean, we can use them, but do we need to identify with them? That's an interesting question to look at. And also more in terms of, if only I had this. It's kind of nearly implying, if only I had this thing, then I would have a better identity, or I would feel better about my identity. But it does not last long. You see, I mean, I wrote many books, and when I got my first book, I was very excited. Because, you know, I was going to get my first book. I am a writer. This is so important. You know, so I got, finally, the book arrived at breakfast. I opened the thing. I look at the cover, the front, the back. It lasted about a minute. Then I still had to go to the bathroom, wash the dishes. And this did not make much difference to my identity. I mean, I was a writer, but I'm not a writer all the time. You know? So it was very interesting to see it. Of course, to have a work, I think, is very important. But to be careful, do I creatively engage? Is it kind of part of my identity in a kind of flowing kind of way? Or do I kind of, in a way, grasp at it and then limit the rest of our identity because of that? And then we can do that with relationship. We can also do that with success. I mean, success, this seems to be a kind of a big thing in terms of identity. If I'm successful, then my identity feels boasted. You know, writers are terrible with this one. So, when, you know, finally, I mean, this is now, it's all so normal, but 20 years ago, there was no Google. Or maybe 25, I can't remember now. But then Google appeared. And then on Google, you could see your rank of how many times you were mentioned. So, of course, I mean, we just had kind of an Amstrad or something. It was really prehistoric. And the first thing we go is Stephen, my husband, his brother, with a little known, myself, little known, and we checked how many Google mentioned we had. So, you know, my husband had more. And then I was, me and the brother were about equal. It's funny. Then you go into, you know, Amazon, kind of, what's your rank? But does it matter? Does it matter? Does it, apart from a brief, pleasant feeling tone of, I have gone up, unpleasant feeling tone, I have gone down. I mean, which is not going to last very long. Because I read an article recently by this lady who was a writer, earned money from her writing, but was not successful. She was not a bestseller. And she was feeling so bad that she was not successful. But I think, you know, if everybody wants to be a bestseller, then, I mean, unless it's in a communist society where everybody has the same level, generally it doesn't work that way. Some book works, some book does not. Who knows, some book just the title works. Who knows? So, in a way, to see that, is success a determinant of my identity? Because then, and this is kind of going to the next thing, so you have your own, in a way, definition, condition of your identity, but then, is your identity based upon the gaze of others? That, I think, is a very dangerous one. Of course, we live with others. This is, I mean, we are, as my husband says, we are alone with others. So there is this relational quality to our life. There is this relational quality to our identity. But do we define ourselves through the definition of others? So if somebody approves of us, does it mean our identity is better? Or can we just sustain our identity by ourselves? That, I think, is something to look at. Of course, we don't want to kind of, you know, be aggress everybody and be nasty and things like that. That's not what I'm talking about. But I'm talking about how much does our identity depend on somebody liking us, on somebody looking up to us, on somebody thinking we are successful, on somebody making us successful by admiring us. And I mean, that's what happened. Like, you have these people who are very successful, like, and then, you know, they have like a few hits, let it be with film or with something else. Especially with film, it's a little more more vagaries. And so you see, like, somebody like Charles Kaufman, who has written incredible script and has tried to direct, and then for 10 years he's like the top. His identity as a filmmaker, writer, director is kind of, wow, that guy has it. And then he has one failure and poof, it's gone, he's nowhere. 10 years of nothing. And then when is your identity there? And I think this is possibly the hardest for, I would say, for artists, for creative artists. I have a few friends of mine who are artists. And it, to me, it sounds like such, in a way, a beautiful activity in terms of creating, but such a difficult activity in terms of that if you make it your financial basis, then actually you have to find people to like you, to like your work. So in a way, the value of your work depends on the gaze of others. And I was, some of my family are really involved in art. And so I was in a museum. We were looking at modern art. And so I was looking at something which looked quite good to me. And then the specialist said, oh, it was good 10 years ago. And I thought, poor thing. You know, 10 years ago, she would have had the identity of being a modern, on top, successful artist, and now she was passé. I thought, and so in a way, this must be so difficult, because I think you need, as an artist, you must need to cultivate such a grounded identity for yourself within your creativity before it resting, of course, a little bit on the approval of others. But in our daily life, also to look how are we influenced in terms of how this identity, by the way, we hope to have the approval of others. Or to me, part of the meditation process is actually to help us to become more confident. And this is what is interesting with meditation. Because we talk about not self, so you would think, oh, this is going to disappear. But actually, on the contrary, if you forget the self and you are enlightened by all things, then your identity becomes more grounded and you become more confident. Because you actually see, oh, what is good about myself? What are my good qualities? What are the good things I can do, which will be part of your identity? And what is a difficult thing? How can I work with them and the condition? And then you yourself will have developed that stable creative identity. And then, of course, that other people like you, approve of you, then, of course, that's nice. Nothing against it. But it does not depend on it. I think that's what we have to really see, the difference between, in a way, appreciating it, enjoying it, benefiting from approval, success, whatever, and depending on it. Because when it's gone, it's like there is a hole, what is left. And then there is another part, was looking at the identity of others. Because there is how we form our identity, there is on what our identity depends on. But what we do to ourselves, we can also do to others. And so to me, to be enlightened by all things, to forget yourself, to be enlightened by all things, is really also learning to see other people's identity as separate from us, in a way, and not depending on us also. Let me explain what I mean. Is that when we meet somebody, do we meet the person for themselves, or do we meet the person for ourselves? And I think a lot of the time we meet somebody, but in a way it's for our own benefit, you could say. It's for we want something from them, we want to get something or whatever. And so that's one way to do that. Another way is like you might have something happening with somebody, and then you meet them, and you don't meet them then, you meet them as if they were 2 months ago. So in a way, you're not meeting the identity of the person now, you're bringing the past identity. And so this is something to really, I think part of the mindfulness, the meditation process, is to look a little bit of how do we view others? Do I view others for themselves? Do I consider them for themselves? And we can notice that easily by a bit of our languaging. And when, for example, we say, I would not do this. This is viewing it from our point of view. Oh, I could do this easily. Viewing it from your point of view. You can do it easily. They might not be able to do it easily. So I think it's kind of like, for ourselves, of course, we are the benchmark, because we cannot know anything else. We're a little stuck. And but we have to be careful. Of course, we can have certain, I would call kind of like benchmark in terms of ethics, in terms of different things, which I think values, to have certain values. And then you would see, oh, does this person share the same value or not? But to be careful to apply our own benchmark to other people. They should be like me. That's one thing. But also sometimes we kind of like we have the benchmark, like we could have a negative benchmark. And then we could see everybody as better than ourselves. And that's extremely painful. Very painful. Or we could have like a kind of a positive, very positive benchmark. I'm doing fine, you're not, too bad, who cares, I'm okay. I mean, a lot of things sometimes in society are happening that way. We are fine, you're not fine, but we are fine. So we want to keep this. So kind of, you know, what is the benchmark? Do we keep the benchmark? Do we kind of, do we try to kind of, you know, make it safe from others, and then we don't want to share it with others. I mean, that's also kind of like the problem nowadays with, you know, we are comfortable and we don't want this to be disrupted. But also as how we sometimes, how we look at others. Do we look at others like, for example, children, in terms of the expectation we have of them? Or in terms of what they can do. Because sometimes you might have, you know, great, I mean, I had a friend, he absolutely wanted a child. I really wanted a child. And his wife was not keen. But he finally convinced her, under very good condition, I thought, the wife put, you know, you take care of her 1 month a year by yourself, I go and meditate for a month. He said, okay. But when I met him before the child happened, he was like, you know, I'm going to have this child and I'm going to be this and that and this father. And there was this huge kind of like identity creation around how he was going to be a father, how the child was going to be, which I thought was a little abstract. And then he had the child and then things got a little different. You know, he had to be the father he could be in that moment. And the child was going to be the child she was in that moment. So I think it's kind of, we have to be careful. There is also the expected identity we might have of ourselves, but there can be also the expected identity we might have of others. Of course, we can help them to fulfill their potential. I think it's different to try to help somebody to fulfill their potential, their aspiration, to kind of looking them again and again through the prism of certain expectation. And then it could be many different kind of expectation. That's what I think. It could be your personal expectation. It could be the cultural expectation. I mean, I think that's what's so difficult. If you're born in a certain environment and you don't feed that identity, you know, like, in a way, there is kind of like a certain norm. Like, at the moment, it's very interesting. I am learning about scientific research and different things like this. I'm learning about norm, that, you know, you need to have enough people in the research so you can build a norm. And I think that in our society, generally, we do the same. We cannot build the norm or what is relatively acceptable most of the time. And what is interesting is that it changes. You know, like, I mean, nowadays, you have lots of single mothers, and nobody thinks anything of it. But 40 years ago, 50 years ago, I mean, it was a very bad identity, very bad situation. And so it's interesting, this kind of like expectation, this expected norm. And if you fit it, then you have a very comfortable identity. I'm a great person because I fit within this society. I fit within this culture. But what if you don't fit the norm? Then in a way, where does your identity can be based on? Because I think that's what, in a way, maybe lots of people are trying to develop nowadays. Different websites, different things, so that people can find their niche. They can find actually, oh yeah, there are some people who are a little like me, so I'm not so different. Because we can be different, but you know, if we feel too different, we feel too disconnected. So I think, in a way, when we look at this question of identity, we can look at it in many different ways. So it's a very rich exploration in terms of our personal identity, in terms of the way our identity can be based upon the gaze of others, our gaze does the same thing to others. How do we look at others? How do we see them? Do we see them? To me, that's one of the big things. Enlightened by all things is really about, do I see the other for themselves? So, that's what I wanted to talk about this afternoon. And so I thought this afternoon I would like, for the meditation, the first sitting, to do a guided meditation on what is called mudita, M-U-D-I-T-A, which is actually translation, appreciative joy, altruistic joy. And the way it works is that you have certain sentences and you repeat the sentences. So generally you have three. You don't need to use the three all the time. And also you could just connect to the resonance of the phrases if you don't want to repeat them silently inside yourself. But I'm going to guide it so you kind of, you will get the idea a little bit. So I'll just say the sentences now, and then I'll show you how we'll tweak them a little bit to with the identity theme. So the phrases are, you have three verbs, appreciating, rejoicing, being grateful. So that's a verb, appreciating, rejoicing, being grateful, but you can use other verbs if they're similar. Then you have different pronouns, and we can play with that. So you can say appreciating my, and if you say my, you feel more there. Or you can say appreciating this. Is it a little more diluted? And then you can have a noun, a name, appreciating this, my effort. And then you have rejoicing. in my or this understanding. Being grateful for my or this existence. So in terms of yourself, you can play with these two elements of saying my or this, just to see, does this make a little difference or not? Because sometimes the language does make a difference, sometimes not. And then we're going to move through different categories. So we'll have people in this room. You take a few of them one by one, either the name, either the face, and then you will say the sentences toward them, appreciating your effort, rejoicing in your understanding, or we could say rejoicing in your success, being grateful for your existence or for your potential. And then I think it might be interesting to play with appreciating your effort, that it's for me appreciating their effort, or appreciating your effort for yourself. So then looking more from their point of view, rejoicing in your success for yourself, being grateful for your potential for yourself. Does it make a difference or not? So it's just a little playing with it. So first, can we stand and stretch a little?